2012. On today's show, we talk about COVID-19 vaccinations and whether or not Butte County will get to herd immunity anytime soon. And we interview 1078 Gallery board members for the latest installment of the CNR's Bring Back the Arts series. But first, another special segment produced for the CNR by Imagining Community, the grassroots media and civic engagement project of local activist, environmentalist, journalist, and longtime KZFR programmer Guillermo Mash. This week, Mash features wildland fire expert Zeke Lunder on fire safety and prescribed burns in drought-stricken California.
Last weekend's red flag warning, the first of 2021, exploded Saturday afternoon into a fast-moving grassland fire north of Chico at Munger Road and Meriden Road that blackened 550 acres before being extinguished. The fire was first reported at 30 acres at approximately 2:10 p.m. and expanded to 350 acres in just over 1 hour. Before the fire was extinguished, 5 outbuildings were damaged or destroyed, with an evacuation order issued for the affected areas on and near Munger Road. Imagining Community reached out to Zeke Lunder, a wildland fire manager and founder of Deer Creek Resources, a full-service wildfire safety company, for his insights and recommendations for mitigating fire risk.
We've got 250 square miles of dead grass in Butte County, and lots of people running around doing things in it. So grass fires are just a fact of life. Did you know that before the campfire, more buildings had burned in the grasslands of Butte County than in the brush and timber combined? If you live within sight of tall grass, even in town, you can easily lose your home to a wildfire. There's a lot less cattle grazing going on in Butte County than there was 50 years ago also. This means we have more standing dead grass, which, along with the warming climate, means that we have conditions on a dry, windy day where grass fires can spread half a mile before the first fire engines even arrive. If you've got a house or an outbuilding with tall grass and weeds growing right up against it, it's not going to survive a fire without help from firefighters. But a house with good clearance and fire safety can survive on its own. So you can buy yourself a lot of peace of mind and fire safety just by weed-eating, grazing, or mowing the tall grass and weeds around your place. But remember, mowers hit rocks and start fires, especially on dry, windy days. So try to mow before the grass turns brown. If you need to cut dead grass, use a weed eater instead and try to finish up your work in the morning before things get too crispy. Keeping the area within 5 feet of your house free of flammable things like firewood or ratty old tarps, that helps a lot. And keeping a completely barren area a couple feet wide all the way around the house of rock or concrete or just bare dirt is also the single best thing you can do besides mowing for fire safety. There's a lot of good information about home hardening online. But just remember that when firefighters have to stop chasing a fire to save your house, the fire gets bigger. So having a fire-safe place not only can save your house, but it can keep the fire smaller, making your whole neighborhood safer. Airplanes, helicopters, they're really effective on grass fires, but they're not always there when you need them. On the Gunnison fire last week, the first 10 helicopter got grounded with some sort of mechanical problem. Another helicopter had to come all the way from Willits. Next closest one after that was over 100 miles away. And on days with our worst fire conditions, there's usually lots of fire starts across the whole region. And fires taking off in brush and timber usually get the priority for aircraft. So we just can't count on a big air tanker showing up to save your house. Fire is inevitable, and fear of fire is healthy. But don't let it make you feel helpless. Dealing with fires is as much a part of living in the West as riding quads, shooting guns, or leaving a gate the way you found it. Maintain your place with fire in mind, and you can rest easier when the winds blow dry.
Let's take a listen as Lunder details the need for the community to trust the professionals to do their job in mitigating fire risk, including the need to seek alternatives to media coverage and understanding the full dynamics of prescribed fire on the ground.
I think what people need to know about the prescribed fire that we're doing is that these people dressed in yellow who have been out for the last 20 years dealing with the worst fires, the people that you think are the heroes and trust to save you and keep you safe, and the people you put the signs up for, they're the same people that are out there doing these prescribed fires. And there's this kind of real cynicism about the ability of the government to get anything right. You know, oh, if the Forest Service is doing it, they're going to lose it for sure. And I want people to have more trust in us. You know, you love us when we're putting the fire out, mm-hmm. but we need you to give us your love when we're lighting the fire. And you need to support us. Some of these fires aren't going to stay in the box. It's the nature of weather. And none of us want to start the next big fire, but there's no doing this without risk. You know, it's not that the fire jumps the line when it's on day one, when it's
pushing hard up the hill. It's that a stump is burning a week later and there's a windstorm and a chunk of burning stump rolls downhill into the green, and then you've got a fire. But I think people need to recognize that a lot of us who are doing this work are taking enormous risk, and we're doing it on the behalf of the people that are going to benefit from safer communities. Mm-hmm. And we're going to need your support. We don't need the media every time there's a burn pile that turns into an acre to say, oh, an escape prescribed fire destroyed an acre of Magalia. It's like, well, one, did it destroy anything? And two, was it a real problem? And three, is the fact that someone left their burn pile that might have been illegal in the first place and went to town and they got away, does that really have anything to do with a professional organization that's out there with all the right equipment doing it in a professional manner?
You just heard from Wildland Fire Manager and Deer Creek Resources founder Zeke Lunder with his insights and recommendations for mitigating fire risk. Learn more about red flag warnings on the homepage of the International Fire Chiefs Association at IAFC.org by searching for Red Flag Warning IAFC. Once again, that's Red Flag Warning IAFC. Guillermo Mash signing off for this special Imagining Community segment on fire and red flag warnings for the May 13th edition of the Chico News and Review on the radio.
To hear more podcasts, search Imagining Community on Spotify and other streaming services. You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. Earlier today, Butte County Public Health announced that the COVID-19 vaccine is now available for all county residents 12 and over. The addition of the 12 to 15 age group will increase the overall inoculation for our area, but will it be enough to reach herd immunity? Is herd immunity even necessary in order to return to life as normal post-coronavirus pandemic? And will we ever go back to normal? These are some of the questions put to Butte County public health officials by CNR contributing editor Evan Tuchinski for an online feature coming out this week at chico.newsreview.com. And Evan joins us now to share what he learned. Hey, Evan, how's it going, man?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good. We got it's an exciting time. Things are opening up in Butte County and the state and in this country, and part of the reason is because people are getting vaccinated, and Butte County has rolled out vaccinations. Anybody 16 and older for sure, and soon, if not now, even younger than that can get vaccines. How's it going in Butte County?
Butte County is doing very well. We consistently rank in the top half of the state, typically in the top third of the state in terms of per capita vaccinations, which is great. There still is some resistance here, and Butte County has done a little bit of outreach to try to figure out why that is. There's going to be even more opportunity to get people vaccinated with the 12 to 15s having eligibility. There's been approval of vaccine for 12 to 15s. There actually is close to approval for under 12s.
Even. Oh,
there's that
okay.
research, and that's going through the approval process. So that's likely to happen. Can't say exactly when, but the fact that they're even getting close, that's great. So school children will be able to have that kind of protection as well, should their parents agree to have that happen. So all of those things together show that there's an expansion of vaccinations.
Sure.
So pretty much then anybody, literally anybody who wants to get vaccinated will be able to get vaccinated. And even now, roughly 85% of people who want to get vaccinated can get vaccinated.
And do you know what percentage of vaccinations we're at now?
We're roughly a third of totally vaccinated. There's the tracking of the first doses and the second doses. There's also the Johnson & Johnson, which is the one-dose vaccination.
Sure.
But all told, we're about a third that's totally vaccinated.
And Butte County Public Health, they have natural concern over people who might have vaccine hesitancy, and so they are campaigning. Talk about some of the efforts that Butte County Public Health is making for making sure as many people get vaccinated as possible.
They're doing a lot of outreach, and one of the things is the survey that I mentioned, where they reached out to people who have that hesitancy to try to find out reasons why they're hesitant.
Okay.
It's not a completely quote-unquote scientific survey. It's not a poll that political folks would look at and say plus or minus accuracy.
Sure.
But it's at least giving them some anecdotal information as to why. At the moment, the top three concerns are people who have concerns about safety of the vaccine, speed at which the vaccine was developed, and side effects from the second shot. The second shot is the same as the first shot. Sure. So that, again, shows you some of the anecdotal nature of those responses. But at least that gives them the ability to go out and message or educate the public on the facts about the vaccine.
Sure.
So there's that, and that'll help them drive their outreach efforts, any advertising efforts they want to do. There hasn't been as much of a demand as there was in the initial phase of vaccinations. Sure. So there aren't as many of the large-scale clinics as we may have seen before. The fairgrounds scale
exactly.
of vaccination
yeah, yeah.
clinics. So they're scaling back on those. And it's possible that there could be a second wave of vaccination push, especially again with the 12 to 15s.
Sure.
And again, that next wave with school, you know, grade school age children.
Yeah.
So they could ramp up again. And that would be another wave of outreach, another wave of marketing, advertising. But those are kind of the efforts that they're trying to do, kind of combat the disinformation, misinformation, and misgivings that people have about the vaccinations, especially with the wider opening coming on June 15th. We still seem to be on track for that wide opening of the economy, and there are concerns about a surge or a spike in cases at that point.
Yeah.
So getting more people vaccinated ahead of that and as that is progressing is a big priority for public health, not just Butte County public health,
sure,
but
of course.
State public health.
And there's a lot of debate around the idea of herd immunity. This numbers get floated anywhere from 65 to 90%, depending on who you're asking. But generally, they float around 75%. Where does Butte County stand with that? And is herd immunity something that they're even focusing on?
Herd immunity was something that they definitely focused on earlier this year. There's a little bit of discussion within public health, depending on who you talk to, as whether that is attainable. It's still a goal. That's something they still would like to see us achieve. The thing that public health officials are gratified by is that the most vulnerable population is mostly immunized.
Sure.
The greatest percentage of immunized people are in the elderly, the health compromised, immunocompromised group. The biggest fear is having deaths, having people in the hospital, having people seriously ill, and having the most vulnerable among us vaccinated alleviates some of that risk.
Sure.
Alleviates a lot of that risk, probably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's the biggest concern for public health. Still, if they could get herd immunity, if they could get that goal of 75% of us so that we're collectively protected, even those among us who can't get vaccinated, either because of age at this point or because of health conditions that prevent people from getting immunized,
sure.
that would be helpful. That would be a positive step. Whether that's attainable is really up for debate. That's been a national discussion
at this point.
Not just here in Butte County and not just among medical officials and doctors here in Butte County. And that is an open-ended question, partly because of that variability in statistics,
sure.
but also whether enough people are willing to overcome that hesitancy, whether enough people can be convinced by the facts over the misinformation.
Sure.
Long story short, there is a goal of that still remains the ambition of
sure.
public health, but whether it actually is going to happen is not as much of a certainty, and it's also not as much of a hard target, a hard goal, a hard aspiration for public health.
Sure. Well, great. Well, thanks, Evan.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. Next up, the CNR's new weekly series, Bring Back the Arts, where yours truly interviews the leaders of local arts and music venues about their pandemic recovery efforts. Last week, I spoke with Mark Edson, executive director of the Chico Theater Company, and this week the spotlight is on the 1078 Gallery, one of Chico's longest-running arts organizations that celebrates its 40th anniversary this year. The gallery has experienced plenty of upheaval even before the pandemic. Born at 1078 Humboldt Avenue, the gallery has moved three times, but has nonetheless cultivated a reputation as one of the hubs of local arts for its daring exhibitions of contemporary and experimental art in every medium by both local and visiting artists. The 1078 recently opened In Decline, a magical installation of shadow and music boxes by Zach Elstein. It's the first show since the pandemic shut down the gallery for which the 1078 was able to throw an actual opening reception party, socially distanced, of course. And it was among the recycled wood and spooky lights and sounds of the exhibit where I met gallery board members Sarah Pape and Matthew Hooten to talk about this past year and what's to come now that there's a little light at the end of the tunnel.
How was it? How was it having a reception?
Wonderful. it was great. Largely a younger crowd than I'm used to seeing at a 1078 art reception. Yeah, people were here to bob their heads and chill.
So. I heard from many people saying, oh my God, it was so great. It felt like we were kind of normal again.
Yeah, had John playing music, Rami playing music, a food truck in the parking lot. Yeah, people were stoked.
So what is the current situation? You just mentioned that the capacity has to be at 30%? No, what did you say, 50%?
I think we were only at 25%. 25%. What we're doing. I don't know what tier we're in. I've been keeping track.
We're in the orange tier.
I think we've been kind of being like, okay, we're in this tier. Let's kind of, we're still kind of a shade of the tier before.
Got it, sure. More
just,
conservative.
Just being safer with it, you know.
So,
or it seems so.
When the pandemic started and the realization hit that this was going to be a prolonged period of time that you have to be closed, like, what was that conversation like?
Well, I think we had to think about how could we turn the gallery inside out in a way so that it still invited a public of sorts, but we couldn't do the things that we would normally do, which I think actually kind of creates an interesting prompt to have to think about, well, then if what we do is outside, what would that look like? So that's, we had already had ideas around the mural project. So the mural went up, okay. Equilateral had, you know, coffee has regular hours that they hold in our parking lot.
That's right, yeah.
And it kind of started to become this interesting hub where the social distancing and the, you know, open air was already kind of built into it. Over time now, we have Sherry Scott in the back who's opening her own nursery.
Oh, Grub.
Grub. Oh, nice. And so in a weird way, it invited a bunch of collaborations between other Chico organizations or Chico businesses that were looking to also not have to house an entire, you know, monthly rent, and
sure.
For us it helps us get through our monthly rent, which is by and large the biggest challenge for the gallery always, whether there's
that
a
big
pandemic.
Overhead, so not all the shows were online only. You guys have gone in and out of being able to have nobody here and having a few people here in social distance.
Yeah, I think we kept shows on the calendar kind of until we could see what was going to happen in the next few weeks, and some artists really wanted to wait until they could have the full gallery experience.
Sure.
But it invited some really cool opportunities like Claire Fong's Imagine Together, which was fully virtual and created that way so that it could all be displayed through social media but then also live on our website as kind of a living exhibition.
Sure. Was that the only one that was fully online?
Tip of the hat to Toth, by
the way. Oh, God.
Yeah. It's an amazing work on there. It went too fast.
Has it been, have you gotten much response to having it online? Has there been a different response? I know that's probably hard to gauge exactly on this repression numbers, but.
Well, we have a brand new social media person, Maddie Hinckley, who's doing a knockout job.
Really trying to stylish Instagram.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
All of these things are kind of coalescing at the same time. I don't think we could have pulled that off without her, because we are a volunteer organization.
Sure.
It's a time-consuming thing to create an online presence and do it well and consistently. And so that was she already had a vision for what that would look like. And it kind of came at a perfect time where we were trying to help people understand that we're still doing things, we're still doing
sure.
exciting things, there's still ways to interact with the gallery. And just because our doors weren't open didn't mean this wasn't still a gathering place.
And do you see any of the stuff that I imagine that some of that stuff will be incorporated going forward now, even once you're opened up?
I think we'll take a couple of lessons from it. How it's going to manifest, I don't really know, but...
Sure.
Yeah.
How was the gallery? You spoke about rent earlier. How was the gallery able to survive throughout all this?
Through the kindness and generosity of our members,
yeah.
We have a pretty robust rent club. People who donate a chunk of money every month to help keep the gallery going. It's been a struggle, especially at the beginning. I think we really had to think about, can we do this?
Sure.
Can we make this happen? And not that the gallery hasn't asked that question over the many decades of its life. But especially now, because I think we feel better asking for donations if we have something that we can offer in return.
Sure.
But without a space to invite people into, I think the question is, what are those people helping to support? And in some ways, it's the imagined future of the gallery, not the current state of it. So that it guarantees that there is a place for art going forward.
And did you get any grants or that kind of help?
No,
financial assistance?
We've applied for a couple grants. We still haven't heard back. We don't totally fit with a lot of the criteria for some of the grants that are happening in California with arts programming. But we will be hearing soon. I think it's just we got by the, just by the grace of the people in this community.
Sure.
Helping us move forward.
What about... you had some live performances during that last reception. Are you starting to make those kind of plans again?
I'm being pretty, conservative with it.
Sure.
Just kind of getting a feel for how things are going, how the summer is shaping up. And, I've kind of put it in my head, like, late summer, fall would be a nice time. Probably more like locals-only
sure.
shows to start. Because who knows, when you're going to be one. Bands coming in from out of town, or if there's even that interest for people to go out, drink, watch a show,
sure.
get rowdy, do all the things you want to do at a show. But yeah, kind of got a little nugget in my head of late summer, early fall would seem maybe okay.
This is kind of just a broader question, but in general, obviously, almost more than anything else, the arts industry has been hit hardest by this because there's just, especially performing arts. Do you guys, looking at Chico and looking at us, maybe a little ray of hope of opening up again, what are your thoughts on going forward and what the art scene needs to bounce back?
I mean, for me, I think we are always stronger together, so we can't be siloed in our own little particular corners anymore. I think we really need to think about who else is interested in doing the kind of work that we're invested in. And really, it made us go back to our mission statement and say, we really want to value inclusivity. We want to be community-based. We want to have an openness for ideas that come from outside
sure.
of the gallery as well. And so I think, it was already something we had hoped for, but the pandemic has really pushed it to become a necessity for all of us to survive. And in some ways, we're coming out stronger for it.
That's great. Are you optimistic about the future of the gallery?
I'm super optimistic. Yeah, big time.
I think it's forcing us to not only go put our insides out, but bring the insides in. And so I think we're reformed based on what's happened during the pandemic. And I'm assuming lots of artists out there have been making art in response to this very particular human experience we've all been through. So I'm really looking forward also to seeing all of those manifestations.
Sure.
And Zach's show right now is just kind of a perfect entry point back into showing art in a physical space.
After our interview, Pape sent me a message saying that the gallery just received word it was awarded a California relief grant. The current 1078 exhibit, In Decline, will be on display through the month of May, and there will be a closing reception Saturday, May 29th, 1 to 4 p.m. For information on how to support the gallery through donations, membership, volunteering, or joining the 1078 Rent Club, visit 1078gallery.org. That's 1078gallery.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Chico News Review, and thank you, KZFR 90.1 FM, for hosting us each Thursday at 5 p.m. And as always, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes this show. Next Monday, the Chico News Review is kicking off its spring supporter drive. If you'd like to contribute to the newspaper's local news and arts coverage, visit chico.newsreview.com/give and consider becoming a recurring donor. And remember, the May print issue of the Chico News Review is out now. Find it in racks all over Butte County and check out the paper online at chico.newsreview.com. Take care.
Why don't we begin?
Report to that. We hope you enjoy.
This is Fresh Hop Cinema.
Hello, welcome to Fresh Hop Cinema, a craft beer and movie discussion based in Chico, California. I am Max Minardi.
And I'm Johnny Summers. Thanks for joining us again. This week on episode 219, we have our review of the animated film, The Mitchells vs. the Machines, from director Mike Rianda. We've also got beers from Klamath Basin Brewing out of Klamath Falls, Oregon. The first is a hazy IPA called Hazy IPA. Yeah. And the second is a vanilla adjunct porter called Backroad Vanilla Porter.
That's right. To all of our listeners on KZFR 9-